It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I have to start with something dumb because I just can't cope. And that's one of the perks of a podcast, is then you make other people suffer the same way. I heard this song, and it's really dumb, and I can't handle it. I don't understand how it got turned into a thing that was on the radio.
Okay.
So, early this week, I'm at the drive-thru for Taco John's, because potato olays are delicious, and it's not moving very fast. I'm listening to on Sirius XM, I'm listening to one of the EDM stations, because I do that, because I'm hip with the kids, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm listening to a song I've never heard before, and it's a harmless, meaningless little auto-tuned bullshit thing. That's not, but I'm like, whatever. I'd never had heard it before. Then a couple things catch me, and I find myself actually listening to the lyrics.
Okay.
Now I'm used to experiencing lyrics that I'm like, wow, these really don't say what I thought they did, or wow, these are incredibly offensive, and even wow, that one part is stupid.
Yeah.
Frequently, it's either stupid because they went out of their way to get the rhyme, and so it makes no sense, or they just could not be bothered with the rhyme, and so it sounds really dumb. But seldom is it just so solidly bad. So the chorus is what I hear.
Okay.
And there's six parts to the chorus, six lines, I guess. I'm going to be honest, I only heard the first five, but I feel like you'll agree by the end, unless that sixth line is like, no, I'm just kidding, never mind all of that. Like, it couldn't come back from this. So, first of all, song's called Promises.
Okay.
First line is, I make no promises.
Okay.
Second line, I can't, or maybe don't, I don't know, do golden rings.
Okay.
But I'll give you everything. Already a horrible song on a variety of levels. First of all, I don't make promises, and then but I'll give you everything. You can promise things and then not do them, and like the police don't show up. I mean, if it's literally just I promise, like not an actual contract or anything. So like the only reason to promise is, you know, for your own trustworthy, like, I am of good character, you can trust me in this. To say, I don't make promises, is to say, I will give you everything, but I'm not even willing to tell you that I'm not lying about it. I'm not even willing to say that.
Hmm.
Like, I could be lying, but no, it'll be cool.
But also, the word everything is pretty all-encompassing.
Right, and then I don't do golden rings. Like,
I mean, a promise is something.
Demonstrably proven at least two things that you can't give me.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the best half of the refrain.
But what does it even mean if it's contradictory like that?
That the song is horrible and stupid.
Oh, okay.
What I at this point, I'm just picturing somebody who's really drunk at last call trying to pick someone up, and they're just not even thinking their words through.
Okay.
But then it goes way south.
Okay.
Next section. Magic is everywhere.
Hmm. That's nice.
And super generic. and weirdly misplaced until the next damn line, which is, There ain't no science here. Let me repeat that. In this love song, after the line, magic is everywhere, the next line is, there ain't no science here.
So a double negative.
The fuck?
So does that mean there is science there?
No, well, I mean, yes. But the double negative is the least of the problems here.
I get it. Why?
Why?
I don't know.
All of it.
I don't know.
Why? I mean, oh, so many whys. Like, I can't even focus on which why. Like, why did you think that was the thing to put in the song? Why are you apparently opposed to science? And why is a lack of science seductive? I mean, is that what we're going for here?
Well, I mean,
We seem to be trying to establish some sort of rapport, although we're not even willing to promise. Also, the whole thing could be a lie, because I don't make promises.
Right.
I hate this person. And I hate all the people who greenlit this enough that, I'm not saying it's necessarily a huge deal to end up on a SiriusXM radio, but some people with some authority had to okay this for that to happen.
I suppose. But I mean, thematically, isn't it just saying, don't overthink it? Don't, in this moment, don't analyze it. Don't go deep enough to wonder if this is something that's going to last forever.
Are you talking about the potential relationship or the lyrics?
I'm talking about,
because I don't think, that's the problem, is don't overthink the words. The stuff I'm saying out of my mouth makes no sense.
It sounds like the person in the song is telling another person, let's just roll with whatever's going on here. Let's not overthink it with thoughts of what's going to happen down the line, like, you know, promises. Because that's what a promise is. It's a guarantee that that the future is going to go a certain way.
But I'll give you everything.
Well, I mean, again, look.
Well, okay.
I hear this sentiment in songs all the time. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Maybe this is written poorly, but it's the same sentiment.
There's a couple of things. One is it's written really poorly.
Yes, yes, yes. I'll grant you that.
And two, dude, this is a bit. Don't step on my joke by trying to be an apologist for this shitty song.
We didn't rehearse ahead of time or anything. I'm not being an apologist. I'm just saying.
You kind of are being an apologist on this.
No. I'm not being an apologist at all. What I'm saying is, this seems like standard fare for what you hear on the radio.
And to me, that's being an apologist. But also, generally, there's a really lame internal consistency, including that usually people in these songs promise. She said, I promise I'll give you everything. It's wonderful.
Okay, if you say so.
And there are songs about one-night stands. They don't involve giving everybody everything. And none of them involve bragging about a lack of science. I am confident on that one.
Well,
none of them. All, in fact, weirdly, the songs arguing for a more casual fling situation seem to be better worded than the songs arguing for true destined love and romance. But this one, I feel like there's head trauma or something involved. It's just bad.
I don't know. It sounds like the same old stuff to me.
It's because you're a terrible person. Hello, everyone.
I think it's because music today is terrible. But music's been terrible for a long time, honestly.
Whatever, Grandpa.
Well, I am old enough to be a grandpa.
Go back and listen to some of those Beatles lyrics.
I'm not a fan of the Beatles.
Me neither. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that's basically the candy corn of podcasts. Most people really don't like it, but like, the people who do really like it, and there's not a lot of them, but, and it's widely considered disgusting, but the people who are into it are really into it and will, you know, die for it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 398.
A coworker the other day was meeting my wife and said, some very complimentary things about me, and also said, and I love his podcast. And I said, whoa, I can't believe it. You're a listener? And he says, I've heard it. I'm just like, oh, God, everybody. Everybody's heard, like, one episode. Like, that's not a... Although, it does sneak in. Apparently, my mother the other day listened to an episode just spontaneously. She was, I think she was trying to find where we were talking about Marjorie Prime or something. So, I do... This is the thing I have to watch out for. I have to act as though any of my friends or relatives could hear thing. I mean, it is on the internet. But none of them do. Except for you few committed hatters, and we love you for it. So this is going to be an ugly two-parter, so pay close attention to my description of how the show works, because I'm not giving it next hour. So, here's how things work. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, spooky people, draw the names. No, don't draw the names. We draw the names. They write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically in its hat, inside of the hat itself. And we, its servants, draw the note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. Whew. Yeah, technically, this is our 2018 spooktacular, because technically the next episode will air the day after Halloween.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is the spooktacular.
Yep. That's what this is. Full moon last night. We're all ready for it.
Ooh. So, nobody was that into it. I thought this was hilarious. So, you know, I do the timesheet reminders at work. Mm-hmm. And I write little stories and jokes and things like that. And actually, recently, those got me a new editor on Oddwings. Somebody from work, we struck up a conversation based on that, and they're going to edit in the next wave of editors.
Very good.
Which will hopefully be in the next few months, because I'm making good progress.
Good.
Getting into the groove of it. I'm fixing a lot of things. I'm liking it better. It's good. Anyway, I wrote one because in the spirit of Halloween, and I basically did a stripped down version of most of like three different urban legend ghost stories. Like, it was basically a thing about somebody talking about this stretch of highway had a man with a hook hand who would drive your car into the trees and kill you or something. And then there was, but after it flashed its lights at you, and then there was a car behind them that flashed its lights and all this. But then they just left anyway. And it was like, but that driver wasn't trying to hurt them. It was trying to warn them, warn them to turn their timesheets in on time. By the end of Friday, and I liked it a lot. But some people liked it. We had some response. But
that's good.
But I thought of you because you always like writing spooky stories.
I did like that.
You wrote a lot of those.
I did.
Mine were spookier.
Probably.
Because it involved timesheets. So how's your week been?
That's been good. It's been... Fall has been fantastic. It was a great drive here, by the way. We're well past peak, but the drive here is probably the best it's looked all month.
The weather is pretty nice. It's not quite cold enough, which is a weird thing for me to say, but if you look over there, I got a new coat, and it's like my first winter coat maybe since I met Trish.
Oh, wow.
And it's really nice, but it's slightly too warm for it. Like, I wore it a couple days, but it's not. So, like, I'm a little bit now looking forward to the colder weather so I can wear it because it's pretty awesome.
The trees are just gorgeous.
They are really nice.
So that's been fun. My wife went, Alice Cooper was at the Paramount in Cedar Rapids, which
An
old, beautiful, restored theater. I believe early 20th century theater. Just gorgeous.
I thought he just golfed now.
Alice Cooper put on a show there, and she went with her brother to that. I didn't go because the last time I went to a concert was, oh man, maybe it's been 15 years ago or something. It was Weird Al Yankovic, and it was at the, the University Theater. They got flooded out, and they had to move it. Hancher. Oh. Sorry, not Carver. Hancher, that's right. Yeah. Hancher Auditorium. or whatever, Weird Al was there, which was a really interesting show because he changes his clothes almost between every
I've heard it's thing. A very...
And I don't know how he does it.
Frenetic and yeah, involved.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, yeah. And it, apparently a similar thing was true for Alice Cooper. But anyway, when I went to that show, it was so loud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was... I think I felt a little sick afterwards. And I realized, I'm getting too old for this. And this was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I have that a little bit. I haven't been to a lot of concerts, but I've been to enough now. And I'm just like, eh.
Well, they...
I like watching a concert on TV, but...
Indoor concerts have always bothered me a little bit because they're just so loud.
Yeah.
So I just knew I wasn't going to be able to handle this, and I'm not an Alice Cooper fan anyway. But she and her brother went, and they had a great time. But we've been doing a lot of... We've been outside a lot trying to take in the fall colors and the nice, cool weather, and it's been pretty fun. Not much else has been going on this week besides that, but the drive here was really spectacular.
Speaking of Weird Al, I only recently, like in the last few months, that there's an older Weird Al song that I only just recently discovered. It's a parody of the Police's song, King, or maybe just Sting's song, King of Pain,
mm-hmm.
called King of Suede.
Yep, King of Suede.
I freaking love it. And I don't know how much of that is I love King of Pain.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just so the same song. Like they do it really well. Like, you can take a melody or whatever and just, like, play with it. But I'm like, no, this is that song, like, under the right circumstance. Like, if Sting sang it, you might not notice it was parody lyrics. Like, but it totally is. I mean, it's a very silly song. But for some reason, I had never heard it.
I think that's on the same album of, like, Ryan the Kaiser and those songs.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure these are ones that I know. I basically, I knew the classic Michael Jackson ones, Eat It and Fat.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the ripoff of Another One Bites the Dust? Another One Rides the Bus.
Yeah, Another One Rides the Bus.
And then my friend had an album just called Polka Party, and we listened to that one a lot. And then that's pretty much it until Amish Paradise.
Oh.
Like, that's it for me. So I've never been big into Weird Al. And at a certain point, I kind of got over him. And I'm still sort of there. Like, Weird Al's a genius, and he does great stuff. And I've heard he's the most... nicest guy in the world, and he's a very accomplished musician. I've heard enough of his parodies
that
I'm okay.
I think that's, like, the same album with Ryan the Kaiser, with Eye of the Tiger. Mm-hmm. Ryan the Kaiser. And then he's got some originals on that album, like Nature Trail to Hell in 3D.
Oh yeah, see, Polka Party, no originals.
No originals.
There's a medley called Polka Party in the middle, but it's a medley of other people's songs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's got, like, I think he had 3 originals on that album, which were really good. I mean, his original stuff, it's still...
I've heard his originals.
It's still comedic. But,
yeah,
some, but very
like
good.
A Jonathan Colton.
Yeah, vibe. Right. Very good stuff. Yeah, so I went with our mutual friend Mick, actually, to that concert.
Ah.
That's been a long, long time ago. But yeah, I left feeling a little ill from all the... Like, the sound was so loud, it, like, vibrated my whole being, you know.
Yeah.
Just too much. So I'm a little too old for that stuff, I guess, now. But my wife and I celebrate, we kind of mark the beginning of our relationship as being on Halloween in 98. So this is going to be 20 years we've been together this year.
I was in the UK then.
And over that, somewhere in that 20-year period, according to the rules of Iowa law, we were common law married.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then then there came an occasion for us to sort of make it official on paper, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we had to pick the year we thought that kind of happened based on the rules. And then we figured out what the date we thought that was, and then we added a few years just to make sure. And that would have been 5 years. So officially on paper, it's 2013.
So the relationship is 20 years, and the marriage,
quote,
is
unquote,
five.
Five, right. And that'll be this Halloween. So
is that, and that's why you're taking next week off?
That's right, because she's taking the following Thursday, you know, the first off, and so it's like, well, yeah, I might as well, like, because she might want to go somewhere Halloween night and then stay overnight or something.
Yeah.
We don't have definite plans, but I just want to make sure I leave the options open for her to make those decisions. So that's why we're doing a two-parter. But 20 years.
That's long.
It's a long time.
I just the other day realized I've been married for more than a third of my life.
Yeah.
And I've lived in this house for almost a third of my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that long.
So, what did you have to say about your week?
Not a lot in terms of doing stuff, still writing. That is progressing. Reading a little bit more still on that same YA series. Saw a lot of scary stuff.
We've been trying to, but I don't think we've been very successful.
I kind of OD'd a little bit. Well, I had 2.5 nights that I had trouble sleeping because I was freaked out.
Wow.
And weirdly, it was not from House on Haunted Hill Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
Though we've been watching that.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
I expected it to be scarier from the beginning based on what you said.
Oh.
I didn't find it that scary.
No, I should have warned you.
But it's getting scarier.
Yeah.
And we're still in it. We watched the sixth episode. Sorry. Can you get that? Drez, your food is here. I got food beforehand, but Trish did not want to. Sorry, that was why I was messing with my phone earlier, because that was coming. I don't know. Maybe because of the screen door. Some people get weirded out by the screen door. But, from the beginning, I'm like, it's not that scary, but it's really good drama.
Yeah.
And then it's getting scarier.
Yeah.
So we've gone through 6 episodes. So we did every kid's episode.
Yeah.
And then we did the episode right after that.
Right.
Which is the first one where Timothy Hutton's involved and stuff. You were not kidding about the play aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like, not only is there a lot of monologuing, it's blocked like a play.
Yep.
In a few places. There was one where, like, this character walks down a hall and ends up in a room and turns a corner just as the younger version of that character walks down the other hall and they start a scene. And I was like, I think I've even been in a play that did that. Like,
yeah. Yep.
And it's really fascinating and the big thing is we're just constantly ranking the children, the terrible, terrible children. And it's tough, I'll tell you right now, because end of Shirley's episode, Shirley was like right down on the bottom, and now like she might be my favorite because of some of these fuckers. Except Nell is always the best, but you know, that's for other, we can't cope with that. And I've realized now, and I feel like he's almost our POV, and he's sort of going to get a redemption arc. But I find it hard to believe Steve's not going to be on the bottom. Steve's, like, not only messed up, he's just a useless human. Like, he's a waste of oxygen and skin and things like that. He's just a horrible human. Of the little kids, Luke's my favorite, and I knew it as soon as I saw Luke. Baby Luke is awesome. I love Baby Luke.
He's pretty adorable. Pretty adorable.
I find it all fascinating because I haven't read the book, although this is actually making me think I want to.
I'm probably going to.
I went by sheer coincidence, like 2 days before I heard this existed, I had, for other reasons, ended up on Wikipedia about it and gone through all the movie version stuff. And the thing is, like you said, it's very different. They take all the characters, and the characters, it varies in different versions, but it's often essentially a lot of paranormal investigators.
Right.
And psychics and stuff going to a haunted house to check it out. And they've taken all of those characters
and made them siblings
in a family that lived there for a little while,
right.
Which is weird. But they use the same names and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's the one who's that. And
some of the same characteristics.
Exactly. So I find that interesting. The other weird thing is Timothy Hutton's in it. Carlo Gugino's in it. who I'm a big fan of.
Oh, okay.
She plays the mom. Hmm. But I didn't think she played the mom, because before I met the mom, I met Theo. And Theo looks exactly like her, except she looked way too young.
Mm.
And then I see them, I'm like, holy crap, she looks an awful lot like Carla Gugino. And I look up this actress, and I've seen her in a couple things a little bit, but I don't know, she's just ridiculously familiar to me, including a lot of her mannerisms in this show. And I'm trying to figure out where why that is. It's very strange to me. But yeah, it's very good. It's very tricky. The first five episodes all take place over basically the same 2 days. And you just get every sibling's perspective on those days.
And I wasn't really a fan of that approach, honestly, but...
But it is interesting. It does things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because things happened that I had thoughts about.
Yeah.
And then later I saw it from another perspective that completely changed my view of it.
Sure, sure.
There's something that happens where somebody says something that really changed my view of that character, and then in a later episode I find out that somebody else told them to say that. And I'm like, holy shit, like, it was, I found it very interesting, but it is a little sloppy at times, and that's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm very into it. It's very freaky, like, it's not keeping me up at night, but it's running through my head.
Sure, sure.
When we really nail the bent neck lady stuff, oh god, that just, I could not get that out of my brain for days.
Yeah.
Have a disgusting pizza. It's got sausage and green olives. I hate green olives. She loves them, so
I like green
olives. We call it disgusting pizza. Yeah, you seem like the type.
The type?
Yeah.
Most people like green olives, don't they?
I think that's a stretch.
Okay.
I think green olives are the most controversial of olive. I will say that.
Okay.
So for the rare blue and pink speckled olive.
Which things have you been watching that have been keeping you up at night?
Well, okay. So we watched a lot of this back to back to back to back. Like, this was basically over last weekend. We watched those six episodes.
Sure.
We were just eating that stuff up. But then... So, a while back, I sort of keep up with Amazon on, like, what have you got going on and what movies or whatever. And they show, they've got this movie that's a sequel, but it looks interesting. I'm like, what's the original? So, I go find the original, and it looks like I already watched it, but I don't really remember it very well.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure what that's about. So, I decided to watch it so I could watch the other. So, on Sunday, in the morning, I watched this movie called Hell House LLC. And it is a very low-budget found footage horror film.
Okay.
It is arguably in that vein I've talked about before that's like fake ghost hunters, but like real stuff happens.
Sure.
But in the case of this one, it is these people set up a haunted house-style attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened on opening night, and 15 people died, and there's been a lot of mystery about it, and now somebody has put together all these tapes, both from what was filmed in the house and what was police reports and other things like that, and put together a documentary about it.
Mm.
And then they did a sequel. That movie was made in 2016 about an event that supposedly happened in 2009.
Okay.
And then in 2018, they made a movie set in, actually, I think it technically 2017. So they're like, it's been 7 years since that happened.
Okay.
Here's what's happened since. And then more things. And because it is very low budget, the effects are minimal. It relies very much on the whole, the camera's not looking that way. And when it looks back, there's something there.
Right, right.
But to its credit, it's not a lot of jump scares because they don't do, like, any musical stings or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently, their most scary thing are people in black robes and hoods.
Okay.
Like, that's it. So it doesn't sound, but... It fucked with me pretty good. And it's just very consistent.
Mm.
The people are not great actors, but they're playing people that you don't have to be that great to, they're playing kind of boring people and
stuff.
And it hits me specifically because that's all back when I was really afraid of the dark and stuff, it was always that something's behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of messed with my head. But to my surprise, the sequel really is connected and answers a lot of things about, like, either somebody had this sequel in mind when they made the first one, mm-hmm. or somebody really, after they made the first one, picked it apart and tried to make a sequel that addressed things in it. Because it ties in really well and it answers a lot of stuff. It sort of gives you resolution. The first one is very like, what happened? We may never know. The second one, you kind of learn what happened. And I don't know why. It was the whole thing was very compelling for being really cheap. And, you know, like on paper, it sucked. Although apparently it won some awards and things in like indie horror circles. But I really liked it. But then, yeah, for a couple days, I was just like really fucked up that like I was going to open my eye. I'm in bed and I'm going to open my eyes and there's going to be like a creepy girl in the hall or something like that. Or clown. There's a creepy clown throughout. One of the most common things is a mannequin they had of a creepy clown that ends up in places it shouldn't. And then sometimes you see it walking and things like that. And that sometimes they're kind of subtle. So you'll have a scene where just like in the background, you'll see something walk by and like the people in the scene never notice. And again, there's no musical sting or anything. So it's just a scene and you're like, guys, wait, they can't hear me. I'm watching a movie.
Hill House does that lots of times. In fact, now that the show's been out, you've got all these videos and articles about here are the things that you missed when you weren't paying attention.
I'm betting Hill House does it better.
Do it a lot.
Because they do. These movies also draw attention to a lot of them, but then there are just some that they don't.
Yeah, right.
And it's a lot of, they did a lot with very little. And I was very impressed with that. But yeah, it just stuck with me and it freaked me out. Hill House is very cool, but it's not like making it hard to go to sleep or anything. Apparently Hell House LLC is available a lot of ways. The sequel, which is the Abaddon Hotel, Hell House LLC 2, is a Shudder exclusive. But I should say, if you like horror films, like real, like not shitty horror films or like campy horror films or something like that, like decent horror, I think Shudder is a good place to go. They have their own streaming thing, but they also just have a channel on Amazon that I think I pay $3 a month for. And there's a lot of good stuff on there. So if you're into that kind of stuff, I would recommend them. But apparently they get a lot of exclusive distribution rights to stuff. And this was one of them, the sequel. So yeah, that kind of messed with me a little bit. We finally saw the second episode of Doctor Who. We haven't seen the third yet.
I haven't seen any of them yet.
Still enjoying that quite a bit. Still liking her.
Good.
And the companions. I think they're getting more ensemble-y with this because we brought in a brand new doctor and three brand new companions all at once.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing some very cool multi-directional relationship-y stuff that is fun. So that's been cool. Haven't watched a lot else, really. Haven't played no video games yet, because I'm not supposed to, because I'm writing.
Discipline, that's what it's called.
Discipline, yes. No, and I'm starting to get into it now, because it's getting a new sheen on it. Mm. Like, the problem is making myself sit down and write.
Yeah.
When I'm sitting down and making myself write, it's not that hard anymore.
Yeah. Huh.
Okay. Although the last chapter I did is hard. And this is a problem. So, I got a chapter. I never liked it. I rewrite it. It's arguably better. I still don't like it. But, I mean, something has to be. I can't just skip the chapter.
Okay.
So, the question is, do I really have to come at it from another angle and just work at it until it's something that's good? Or do I acknowledge that it is a necessary but not particularly interesting or useful section and just try and get through it story-wise as fast as I can?
Mm-hmm. That's tricky.
Because it's not. This is the girls show back up at the office building and the security gets them and they have to go back in. They have to go inside and Carolyn has to go see the big man a second time.
Okay.
And that's it. Like, the part before, interesting. I put a lot more character stuff in there, too. Mm-hmm. And the part after, really big deal. Like, sort of a reveal of the whole book. But that part is mostly a point A to point B. But it's just, it feels awkward and stuff. And so I'm like, so do I just need to really bang my head against this and come at it from a different way so that it's good? Or do I just need to say, no, we get through this. Nobody's that interested. Move on. And I don't know what the right answer is there.
Well, I don't know if there is a right answer.
Right? Well, I think for now I leave it how it is since it's going through a bunch of people's hands
sure,
again.
Sure.
But
you might discover as you get more feedback that someone will say, there's this piece of information that I don't feel like I have about the plot or about a character or about a relationship. And you'll realize, okay, well, I need to cover that somewhere. And then, oh, I could cover it here somehow.
Well, and I got a ton of that. I got a ton of that.
Yeah. So
in the first round, and I've put a lot of that in.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to minimize the things I'm not doing well at and maximize the things I'm good at.
Sure.
There's a lot more banter. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the Carolyn Rebecca sort of side conversations that happen at the weirdest times. I had a few of them in there, and they were very popular. Mm. And so they're getting a lot more. And what cracks me up is there's one spot where I'm going through it, and I'm like, I accidentally made a pun here. Should I take that out? And I'm like, no, I'm going to make it a thing where they're having a conversation. Was that it on purpose? What are you talking about? I mean, come on, focus. And then I'm going back and looking through the edits, and I had apparently jumped ahead or whatever, and I look, and you mentioned it in your edits. You're like, was this a pun? Did you do this on purpose? And the answer is no, and I forgot you said that, but then I discovered it again myself and wrote it in as a real thing. So now, yes, it is on purpose.
I don't remember so what it was, but
that was funny.
That I thought it was clever.
She fell into a hole. And then she had a whole thing. Absolutely didn't do it on purpose. But
that's good.
And it is tricky. There were quite a few things, some from you, where exactly one editor was like, I don't know what this means. But like no other person had a problem. And some of them I'm like, okay, I'll explain it. And other ones I'm like, I think that's just them. Yeah.
Right.
Or, and I think there was at least one where I was like, I can understand why you wouldn't know that. I don't think it's a problem because of the context.
Right, right, right.
So, but, yeah. No, I think that's going well. Yeah, all right. Do the thing. By the way, before somebody has to write in and ask, yes, I'm still going to the gym every day because I'm awesome.
Azure Talon.
Ooh, Azure Talon.
This one has been truncated or
digested
or abridged or however you want to say it.
Made tinier.
Hattites.
Ooh, that sounds fancy somehow. Are we in scripture? We were the Hattite. No, those are Hittites. What's a Hittite?
A Hittite is like it's a nationality. It was a nation in
of Hittia.
No.
Hittania.
No,
Pittsburgh?
No.
Who were the Hittites?
The Hittites were, it was, I guess you could say it was an empire, like, I don't know, I want to say 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. No, not that long. Well, maybe.
So what's a Hattite?
I don't know.
Well, you're reading it.
Hittites would be, I'm trying to really think here.
So that's the thing, though, that's just the verb, that's the adjective form or whatever.
3,000?
So what's... The Hittites were the empire of Hittia.
No, they were just called... They're just called the Hittites,
but
as far
see,
as I
that's
know.
But see, the Persians had Persia and stuff like that. There's got to be
it.
Something.
I get it, but I've only ever heard them called the Hittites. They were
hit a lemon ding dong.
The Greeks had to contend with them, and
the Greeks from Greece. Hittites from Hitsylvania.
I hate it when I can't remember time periods and stuff because I should remember things like that.
Hitzenstein.
Anyway, you can look them up, people. You can look up the Hittites.
A lot of people don't realize Hittite was actually the name of the doctor, and technically the monster would be called Hittite's creature.
What? This is written weirdly.
It's Azutalan, so yes.
What are the silliness? What are the silliest RPG NPCs you've used?
That would make sense. And I'm confident the hat did not screw that up and make it a typo.
Or
I'm confident
that
was in the original. I'm confident the hat probably even looked at that and said, what? But then said, that's what it says. That is what I will magically transmogrify onto the card.
What are the silliest RPG NPCs you've used, seen, or can come up with on the spot? Love you, bye. Oh, he loves us.
The scary thing is that was abridged. I'm terrified of what the long version of that is.
I mean, you know, in the games that I've played are, you know, mostly, I mean, there have been a few campaigns, but they're mostly little one-shot things. And
yeah.
A lot of times run by Dave Avid, and his NPCs are awesome. But I can't, like, pick one out because they're all good. So I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to come up with, like, one really good example of that.
Silly, like, if you ask me, I'm like, yes, of course, tons of silly NPCs. I've both played them and played in games where they were. But then to, like, specific ones, it's harder.
I remember you talked about one once that the players had to interact with, but it didn't really say anything. It just made this little noise and yes and no. And
that might have been me.
That was you. You were...
No, but I mean, I did that one time in a job.
No.
For a whole shift. I used to do things like this when I worked at the lunch, at the deli counter at the student union in college. It was part of work study. I would get bored, and so there'd be nights where, like, all I would say was, yes, and no, and that was the only thing I would say. There were times where I would, like, make a hand puppet, and people had to order to the hand puppet, and the hand puppet would whisper to me.
Well, this is a thing that you, not only did you talk about, I think, on the podcast, but I think that you videotaped it or something. Not videotaped. You filmed it. Or someone took a picture of it with their phone and posted it or something, because I actually saw you doing it.
Ooh.
Do you remember this?
I don't.
Okay, I don't.
Was this the other guy you do a podcast with?
No, it was you.
The GM you do a podcast with?
No, it was you. I can't remember when it was. I do believe you talked about it.
I do make cute little animals sometimes that can't actually...
I think that's what it was, an animal.
Speak?
But communicate somehow. Yeah, 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 like that kind of thing.
I do a lot of funny voices.
But there are only two accents, you said.
They slowly morph into that, as long as I do it short enough. A few times, I have basically made an NPC that was the Bronson Pinchot character Serge from Beverly Hills Cop. When I was younger, well, I was obsessed with Beverly Hills Cop, but I was also obsessed with Serge. And so Serge ended up in a lot of games. I do things like, there was one game it was a vampire game, and one of the vampires had the ability to talk to animals and things, and they ended up somewhere where the animals were all, like, an organized crime thing. Like, they all worked, like, together, and the boss was, like, this owl, and he's like, what are you doing here? and he was not very bright, because he was a bird. So, like, she was trying to bribe him for help or whatever, and something about hamburgers. What is hamburger? And so he's like, raw meat. He's like, can I have some? She's like, I don't have some here. And he says, okay, but later? Yes. Now? No. Later? Yes. Can I? Like, it very much became like a Senior Wences bit that went on for a long time.
Yeah.
And whenever he couldn't get what he wanted, he'd be like, you have betrayed us. And so, like, I've done that. I have this thing where I like to put an NPC in every game named Bob, regardless of the genre or, like, the naming conventions in the game. I always have somebody named Bob. And I mean, I've run games where the whole thing is silly.
Mm-hmm.
I've run games. I ran a Star Wars game. I think I've talked about this before, where they were on a space cruise ship, and somebody, I don't remember if they were, I think they were there to like bodyguard somebody or whatever, but like somebody took over the ship. But here's the thing, it took place post-Jedi, and this was way back before there was any Force Awakens or anything. They were on this cruise ship. It had an outside deck that you could walk on,
mm-hmm.
even though there was like no air or anything. People were playing shuffleboard, and like they would knock the piece off the, and it would fall off the other side.
Like into space.
Yeah, like just fall down though.
Down.
It fell down. All the they got a really bad room, and it was like they had to go through like these steam tunnels and stuff to end up at this room that they had. But it was a nice room, but like they just had to go through all these back tunnels. All the bad guys wore domino masks just like all the time and had really heavy German accents. What's amazing to me is all the things I've listed here, I didn't tell them it was a parody game. And none of these things tipped them off. Including when the Wookiee was trying to make a decision, and genuinely a little tiny angel Wookiee and a little tiny devil Wookiee showed up on his shoulders. When it finally hit them that this was a parody game, was when things were getting bad and people were being... I don't even think it... I mean, it started to get suspicious because they were like 30% of the passengers have been kidnapped. They're like, how do you know? And they pointed, there was a gauge on the wall that had percentage of passengers kidnapped. And then they went to a different place and they're like, 30% of the passengers. Like, no, that guy always exaggerates. And they pointed to their wall where there was one that just said 16%. But what tipped them off is when they're on the bridge and they're like, you have to turn the ship around. It's like, we can't. Somebody sabotage the controls. And he gestured to the controls, and somebody had put the club, like that thing you used to put over the steering wheel. Mm-hmm. Somehow that was when they figured it out. And then they got into the spirit of it, because mm-hmm. like they caught the bad guys, mm-hmm. and the bad guy had cigars for some reason, and he took them and started smoking one, because he was the bad guy's cigar. But the bad guy had another one, so he took it out and lit it. And the guy's like, no. And he gave it to one of the other bad guys to smoke, just because he didn't want that bad guy to have one. He wanted him to be sad. The villain turned out to be Emperor Palpatine, or more accurately, Emperor Palpatine's head grafted onto the body of a chihuahua.
Mm.
The game ended when James Hong's character from Gremlins walked in, got the dog, put him in a box, and said, someday you may be ready for Emperor Dog, but not today. And then walked out.
Emperor Dog.
Yes. That was the end. We had plotted a sequel, because one of the characters was an R2 unit, and the only thing we had set for it was a picture of that R2 unit wearing a black cape and like an outer version of the Darth Vader helmet.
Mm.
Like, we didn't know how we were going to get there, but we knew that was the basis for the game. But then we never did it. So, I mean, that was silly.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring that up because the ambassador they were trying to rescue, or they were trying to guard, was Ambassador Bob.
Mm.
So that was, yeah, that one was kind of silly, I guess, a little bit. You played Atomic Robo. That must have had some silliness in it.
It did. I don't remember. I mean, that's another thing, is when we play these things, there's several of us.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of call for NPCs, really, when you have that many people.
Especially if it's a one-shot, and so you have, like, a directive.
Sure. I mean, you do run into NPCs, but sometimes they don't do very much.
I do a lot because everybody loves my NPCs, and they get really attached to my NPCs, so I try and throw as many as I can at them. Speaking of silliness, did you... watch any more Curious Creations of Christine McConnell?
Did not.
You should. We finished it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very... I liked it. It continues to be bizarre. It had one episode that I felt was weak. But luckily, the episodes after that made up for it. Like, the last episode might be the best episode.
Mm.
Still recommend it. It is bizarre. The shock wears off eventually. Like, I wasn't going, what is happening? Like, the whole time. Because I still don't get why it exists, but at a certain point I understood what we were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went along with that. But yeah, so I still recommend it. Also, that is a really great palate cleanser when you're watching something really intense like The Haunting of Hill House.
I suppose that's true, yeah.
It was very useful for that. We keep just using Rose's catchphrases and stuff now. If anybody knocks on the door, we're like, "Honk at it!" She always... Like, but she never gets to the door, but she always says that. I got more into Rose and less into Rankle as time goes on. At a certain point, Rankle just seems to be spiteful for attention. And you're like, yeah, I see you. Knock it off.
I see you.
And Edgar kind of Edgar becomes pretty sweet. I like him.
Oh, okay.
But you never met Norman. Oh.
No.
You never met Veronica. Like, there's a bunch. You got to watch the rest. Norman's pretty cool. Norman's your boyfriend, eventually.
Okay.
He's pretty cool. Yeah, so watch that. Yeah, I don't know that there's enough time to draw out another one, but we still got a couple minutes left.
Oh.
So.
And we don't have anything to talk about?
I find my role-playing games end up having more humor than I intend most of the time, because we're all just a little awkward with really acting. So, like, we have to make a joke that's sometimes often out of character, but then sometimes it's in character. I like making little creatures, like the sci-fi game I had a while back. Each of the characters got a genetically enhanced cyber cat at a certain point. And they all had very distinct personalities, and like some of them could talk, and some of them couldn't, and they had different... And in fact, at one point, in order to save someone's life, they basically shoved their little cyber cat into somebody's spacesuit and instructed them on how to do CPR, because they were like in vacuum, so they couldn't like leave them out there. And those were fun. And yeah, like one of them was named Dodge, and he was always getting shot at, and he would like run ahead all the time. And they're like, "Dodge, stop it!" He's like, "Is this a sandwich?" He was always trying to eat stuff,
but he couldn't tell it was a sandwich.
No, he wasn't sure. He had heard about sandwiches at some point.
Mm-hmm.
He was not bright. Yeah, and then there was Queenie, and she just didn't talk, so she's like, "Rrr," and she could understand you perfectly, but her responses were, I was like, "Rrr." So that got tricky. So
that does sound tricky.
I like those. Those are fun.
Yeah, I mean, another thing about role-playing for me is I get pretty caught up in doing the character or whatever doing.
You get very method with it.
I guess. And I also trying to respect what everyone else is doing, and you know, I don't want to step on anyone's toes or anything. So
you got to be careful what you play then. That's a constant conundrum. You want to be respectful of everybody else's play, but what if you're playing a character who's not particularly respectful
exactly.
of others?
That's exactly right.
And I've seen it happen, and I've seen it get out of hand.
Oh, well, I mean, that one time I was playing the Pied Piper in this game, and he was not a respectful person. And I played the character, and sometimes he was rude, and sometimes he interrupted people, and sometimes he laughed at other people's misfortune, because that's my version of Pied Piper would do. And afterwards, I was a little worried that I might have overplayed it, but it seemed like that's the character, so I didn't know.
It's I've been playing around a little bit with this. Right, in my group, there's a married couple, and that's always a fun thing. Like, do tensions happen if, like, somebody else gets romantically involved with somebody or whatever. And this group is fine. I have had it in the past. I ran a game where I had everybody play literally themselves, and I pulled a Dungeons & Dragons cartoon kind of thing on them. Like, something happened, and they all got transported to this mystical realm in the bodies of other people that had already existed there. Mm-hmm. And two of my players were a couple. And I ended up doing a thing where one of them was, like, engaged to somebody, and when they went and met that person the first time, he ran over and was like, "My love," and, like, kissed her and stuff like that. And it was awkward in-game, as it should have been. Mm-hmm. But then, like, we took a break shortly afterward, and it was awkward out of game. Like, they were kind of snippy to each other stuff, and I'm just like, this got weird. And I would feel guilty about it to this day, but they did eventually marry, and they have a kid and have a very happy life. Okay. So I'm not too worried about it. But at the time, it was very surprising to me. I was like, guys, this is not real. Like, I don't remember what my point was with that. But
I don't know either.
Oh, no. The balance between playing the character and then being a good player at the same time.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, and well, and then you find people, because there's always interpretation of characters. And some people like to interpret their characters in ways that can be really obnoxious, because it gives them an excuse to be really obnoxious.
Right. Which, and some of these people didn't know me. So they might think that about me. Like, oh, I like to be a jerk, so that's why I chose this character.
I suspect you were careful.
I hope I was.
I suspect you were.
But I mean, this is something that
prescriptive.
I've talked about before with role playing is I approach the whole thing as a storyteller and to a lesser extent, but a significant extent, I think, as an actor, not as a person who's playing a game.
Yeah.
So I have to consciously inject that sensibility into it, or else I'm just going to get
absolutely
swept away in it.
And it's, I mean, and this goes into whole, you know. You also can't do a complete deep dive into your character, because otherwise you can do things that make the story suck.
That's right.
And the classic version is, "Hello, adventurers, I have a quest for you." Huh, let me think about, my character wouldn't do that. No, I'm going home. Why would I do that? And I've had this a few times, and I like to play with it. I had something with the groups. I'm like, "I have a proposition for you," and I've described these things like, "You are, of course, free to leave at any time, but it is the premise of the adventure, so if you did, I guess you'd just sit out the rest of the game and watch the rest of us play. But anyway..."
Well, of course, when you're working your character, you do have to be careful. Like you said, you do have to be careful of doing things with the character that's going to method it right out of the game.
And if you're good, you build this in beforehand.
That's right.
I have had games where I'm like, "Guys, this game is going to be predicated on you all having a sense of adventure and exploration. So please don't make a character who really just wants to settle down and have a quiet life."
Well,
there are games where you can make that character and I can throw you out of that situation whether you like it or not. But sometimes I'm like, for this game to work and its premise to work, I really need somebody who's actually going to put themselves out there.
They can be reluctant. They can have some other reason to do it. Like, "Oh, well, my girlfriend's going to be killed if I don't."
Well, yeah.
There's
some
crazy thing like
that.
No,
but there's just some games where I'm like, I don't care. Make whatever you want. Trust me, you're going to get pulled into this.
Yeah, right.
But then there's ones where I'm like, it's a little... Because I frequently don't like to tell them what even the premise is going in. It's very common for me to be like, "Your characters are in this age range. They have to have, they can have any background, but this has," like, I had one where I'm like, well, I had one where we made a future history of the world. We started from the 21st century and we went through, like, the 25th century and basic things that happened. And then I was like, "Okay, guys, you can make absolutely any character from any period in time we have just described, which is like 500 years. The only condition is, at the end of your life, you were imprisoned in cryogenic suspension for crimes." And it doesn't have to be crimes you actually committed.
Yeah.
You could have been falsely imprisoned
or
framed. But that's how it had to end. Otherwise, go nuts.
Well, there have been times where one of my character traits is cowardice.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough.
Yes.
Because that person has to resist somehow, or find a reason not to, or figure out a way to get the other players to give them a reason
and not, just freaking leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, no, that's a very definite thing.
That's a very hard
That can be a tricky one to do.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of time here, so we'll be back in just a little bit. For you guys, it'll be a week. So, happy Halloween.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.